Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, Shloka 48, name number 446, is Yajna, a well-known word in all Indian languages, including Tamil, I believe. Apparently this should be properly pronounced Yajna. Different ways to pronounce this. But in modern Indian languages, the J-N is always pronounced Gya. So this is a name of Lord Vishnu. Specifically, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 12, the seventh avatar is the son of Prajapati Ruchi, and his wife Arkuti. He controlled the period during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu and was assisted by demigods such as his son Yama. And this is the meaning that Baladev Vidyabhushan, the Gaurya Vaishnav commentator on Vishnu Sahasranam, gives. Apart from this avatar of the Lord, this particular form, this name may refer to Lord Vishnu. Otherwise, it's a well-known word meaning what's translated into English as sacrifice. The word sacrifice, like many other words in English, has several meanings. One of them being a ritual sacrifice, ritual offering, or ceremony of offering, religious ceremony of offering, which in many cases, in many religious systems in the world, involves the killing of animals and offering them to the various spirits or gods or God that is conceived of by the offerers. So there are various levels of this. The very lowest level is the offering to spirits, low class spirits. In the mode of ignorance, there are also within the Vedic culture, within the persons in the mode of ignorance, they may offer animals which they desire to eat to Goddess Kali, highest, or well, high level, we can say, of Vedic culture. There are also animal sacrifices, Gomedha, Ashvamedha. These sacrifices, that means sacrifice of a cow and sacrifice of a horse. These are forbidden in Kali Yuga and in many religious traditions in the world. In fact, I think pretty much all of them. As far as I understand, the Roman Catholic Mass, which probably most of you are not familiar with the exception of... Are you familiar with the Roman Catholic Mass? Slovakia is Catholic, and you're also familiar with that, coming from a Catholic background. As far as I understand, it symbolizes the sacrifice of Jesus. It's supposed to be a mystical reenactment of the Last Supper, in which Jesus he's preparing to sacrifice himself for the, this is how it's interpreted in Christian mythology, we can call it. They call it Hindu mythology, but I think if we examine objectively, Christian mythology would be more, the term would be more appropriate. So the idea is that Jesus, he broke the bread and distributed and drank the wine, and he said, "This body is my, this bread is my body, and this blood is my, wait a minute, this wine is my blood." So by eating this, you're ritualistically eating Jesus. And they go on. And there was an idea in the original Christian Mass that they give food to everyone, just like we distribute prasad, and it's supposed to be the body of Jesus. So it's the same idea. We distribute prasadam, and it's non-different from Krishna. Now they just make some ritual of some little wafer of bread, which it's not really bread at all. It's specially made just for this, and only Catholics in good standing are allowed to take it. If you get kicked out of the church by the Pope, then you're no longer allowed to take the Holy Communion, it's called. And then you have to join all the majority of the population of the human race that's ever been in hell, because you can't take the Holy Communion anymore. Anyway, the idea is that it's probably not much thought about by the people who attend Masses, but it's in the spirit of sacrifice. And presumably the Christian Mass was Catholic Mass, I don't know what they're doing now. But that was incorporated into the... It's not that Jesus said to do it. In fact, Jesus didn't make any church or any priests, bishops, popes, nuns, or any such thing. But in the culture of the Mediterranean areas at that time in which Jesus appeared and in which his whole... The whole movement that grew up in his name shortly after he passed away was in the beginning mostly in the Mediterranean area, and there, as probably much else of the world, people couldn't imagine religion. For them, religion means there has to be some ritual sacrifice. And so they made this Mass because they had to have some ritual sacrifice. At the same time, they didn't want to worship idols and all this kind of thing. So sacrifice, of course, in Kali Yuga, the sacrifice, the yajna, we should be a little careful not to use these two words interchangeably, because the term yajna in Sanskrit has a far greater connotation than that of sacrifice. Of course, in translating words, almost any word from one language to another, unless they're very close languages, there's going to be some difference, even slight, of meaning. So, yajna, there are various kinds of yajna which are mentioned, and the whole idea which are mentioned in the Vedic literature and which are or previously were practiced. In Kali Yuga, the sacrifice is Sankirtan Yajna, chanting, the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Krishna Varnang Tusha Krishnang Sangopangastra Parshadam Yajnayar Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti Hi Sumedha Saha. So Yajanti, that word comes. It's generally translated as worship. People in Kali Yuga, people who have good intelligence, they worship the avatar for Kali Yuga, who is Krishna but not Krishna. He's Krishna but he's not black. They worship him who appears with his associates, weapons, etc., by performance of Sankirtan Yajna. If we understood how important the concept of Yajna is in Vedic culture, then we'd have more appreciation of what it means when it's stated that in Kali Yuga the Yajna is Sankirtan Yajna, because this is Yajna is really the whole culmination of the whole of all the activities of the Varnashram system, and it's a process of worship. Yajanti, they worship. So that word can be used otherwise also, just like yes, yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitri vrataha vrataha bhuteja yanti bhuteja madhyajino piyanti mam. So madhyajino, by the worshippers of myself, Krishna says. So yajna is a system of worship, of sacrifice. The English word sacrifice, it very much conveys the meaning of giving up something that is dear to oneself, giving it to someone else, or forswearing it for the sake of others, or for a higher cause or better benefit. It can be used in various ways. But it generally, giving up something for a noble purpose, something that one could have personally enjoyed, but chooses not to do for the higher benefit of others. Just like some of you may remember, a few years ago when after the general election, the Congress had, they won the election. They had more seats, at least with their fair weather friends, they could form the government. And it was expected that Sonia Gandhi would become the prime minister or prime ministeress, but instead, ministeress, is there any, I don't even know if there's any such word in English. There is in Sanskrit, mantri, mantrini. But she instead decided that Manmohan Singh should be invited by the president to form the government and be the prime minister. And in a newspaper headline, it said, the supreme sacrifice. She sacrificed the opportunity to directly mess up the country and instead did it indirectly. Sorry, we're not supposed to be political here. All right, I'll retrieve that. I'll retrieve that statement. Anyway, you get the idea. So sacrifice, sense of giving, and sacrifice an animal. In Islam, there is the idea of sacrificing a camel, because camel is very valuable to the Arabs in the desert. It's so central to their subsistence and way of life. In the pre-oil times, or the nomadic Arabs, they very much depend on the camel. So it was a great sacrifice. Of course, after sacrificing, they'd eat the meat, camel's meat. But at the same time, they lost a camel in the process. So the idea is that you offer this to God. Similarly, in South America, in some religious cults, they may sacrifice a llama, kind of animal that acts as a pack animal and gives milk, similar to the camel in the desert, but is suited for mountainous terrain, so they may sacrifice a llama. It's very valuable to them, so it's a great sacrifice. It's a loss to them, but they feel they have to offer that to God, to the god or to some spirit to appease them. If things are going wrong, the weather is very bad, or the crops are failing, then they think it must be because the god is not pleased, so we need something to make him happy. Okay, we'll kill this animal and offer the blood, because the god likes to drink the blood. And that's the idea. And then everything will be all right. So that's the idea. So making some sacrifice of an animal. The idea that God likes to drink the blood is not there in the Vedic sacrifices, although it may be there in those which are executed by those who are offering to Kali. There may be the idea that she likes to drink blood, but it's only an idea because she doesn't. As Srila Prabhupada explains in one purport, Kali is a manifestation of Durga, who is wife of Lord Shiva, who is a Vaishnava, and like most Vaishnavas, with a few exceptions, Lord Shiva is not a meat eater. He only takes the food which is offered to Vishnu. And Durga, as a good wife in Vedic culture, there was a concept which the older ladies here might have grown up with, which is more or less gone and forgotten now, that the wife would eat the remnants of her husband's food. So she's also a vegetarian. So then if this is offered to Kali, the sheep or goat, oh, it just reminds me, coming here in the morning, when you're going out in the city, in Tamil Nadu, especially on a Sunday, keep your eyes closed, Sunday morning. It's not good to see all this, so much meat. Very bad. We should make propaganda. Yeah, stop all this animal killing. People are suffering so much. They're suffering so much, and they think they'll get a little pleasure by eating meat on Sunday, but they don't know that by eating that meat, that's the very cause of their suffering. One of the causes of their suffering. Very horrible to see. Actually, a Vishnu temple should be established in a sacred place. This meat eater should be a long way away, but they're right in the village next door. As in some holy places in India, the sale and consumption of meat and killing of animals is banned. In Rishikesh, for instance. In Vrindavan, I asked, is there any meat shop? He said, well, there was, someone tried to open one, but it got burned down. So, good. We should make that a rule. In the vicinity of a Vishnu temple, no, and actually a Shiva temple also, because they should, and no meat eating allowed. And then just make Vishnu temples everywhere, and then stop all the meat eating. We should be doing this kind of thing. Our movement should have come to that level. We're lagging behind here. So, sacrifice, yeah. So, the ultimate sacrifice is the sacrifice of oneself. That's that the spirit of sacrifice, that it's not all for me, that should be given. Not that all the work I do, it's not for just for me to enjoy. Something should be offered in sacrifice. So that's in the Karma Kanda, and when that spirit becomes totally internalized, then one acts as a karma yogi, one kind of karma yogi. But within the Varnashram system, even if someone is very selfish, they still, by nature, they still have to perform sacrifices. But the idea is that by giving, you get more back. And that's pretty much the whole attitude in pretty much all religion everywhere. So many people go to Tirupati and put money with the idea it's a good investment. You give money, you get back. You get back more. Or someone, and actually we find it usually works also. I guess it works with Sai Baba in Shirdi also. I mean, why are people mad in going there? Some perverse energy, some perversion of this principle is working there. People worship because they have the idea. Maybe not in terms of money. There are some temples where people think, I'll go and give something, I'll get something that I want, like passing my exam, getting a visa for America, getting children for childless couples. The idea is you offer something, but it's like a bribe. That, okay, I know you like these offerings, so okay. And even the demons do that. To be religious and offer something to God is not in and of itself a sign of being a pious person. Because we see even Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, they worshipped Shiva. So their worship was not in a spirit of, it's not the spirit of sacrifice. One may perform sacrifice, but the spirit is, I'm giving, but I want something back. And that's mentioned by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. What is that? Nama yagyaste dampena vidhi purvakam. The demons, they perform sacrifices in name only, but with great arrogance and not according to the proper system. So performing a yagya in and of itself is not, going through the rituals of it is not in and of itself pious, but it's meant to live to this, meant to lead one to the spirit of Atmanivedan, of fully giving oneself to Vishnu. That's the idea. Bali, we have Bali Maharaj, and the word, he fully gave himself to Vishnu. He gave everything he had, including he sacrificed his prestige and his, not only the whole universe, but he sacrificed his prestige. With it went his prestige and his power, and quite possibly even all the friendships that he had. He was prepared to go to hell for that, because his guru warned him that you'll have to go to hell for disobeying me. And he ultimately gave him his very self by offering his head as the third footstep for Vamana. The space covered by his head was very insignificant compared to half of the universe, which each of the previous two steps had done. And Vamana stretched out his hands to cover the sides also. It was very insignificant. But it was symbolic. It symbolized that I'm giving my very self. And in sacrifice, an animal is, sacrifice of an animal in particular, is called balida, the offering of bali. That means, it means an offering. One who's, so the system of yagya in the Varnashram system is supposed to the idea that, well, just don't keep it all for yourself. Idam Narayanaya Namama, they offer to Narayana, or you may offer to some demigod. Various demigods. Other names of Vishnu come in the Vishnu Sahasranam. He's actually Yagyeshva, Yagya Bhuk, the Lord of Sacrifice, the enjoyer of the sacrifice, even though the sacrifices may in name be offered to others. So the idea is to go from offering something to not to mentally forswearing something, to take one from the platform of selfishness to the platform of selflessness, to the platform of completely giving oneself to Vishnu. So that's the psychological progress of those engaged in performing yajñas. And of course, yajña doesn't mean just this ceremony there, but the public yajñas, which are big yajñas, which are organized by kings. They become the yajaman, or the person on behalf of whom the sacrifice is performed. The king does so engaging the brahmanas, who are the yajniks, or the performers of the sacrifice. He engages them, and as the yajaman, he represents all of the people who have cooperated. For instance, if grains are offered in the fire, then the grains are produced by the Vaishyas with the help of the Shudras, under the direction of the Kshatriya, the king, and with the rituals performed by the Brahmanas. So everyone's involved. The animals are also involved, because the bulls also help to plow the fields for production of grains. Ghee, similarly, ghee is offered in the fire. So that's a combined effort. It's a combined effort of all the society. It symbolizes the offering of all the work of the society. And so that everything is offered to Vishnu and others. The Baba will shave the Yajaman, the king, at the time that he's initiated before performing the sacrifice. One takes a special initiation for performing a major sacrifice. The weaver will give new clothes, which are to be worn by the king during and the queen during the time of the period of the sacrifice, very simple clothes. And by the brahmanas who perform the sacrifice, and by others also. The potter makes pots. He has to provide so many pots, and so for the sacrifice. And in this way, everyone is engaged. And if they're not engaged, there may be someone like the local doctor. He may not have any direct involvement, but the very fact that he's part of the whole society, which is engaged in producing materials which are used for, they're ultimately made for the sacrifice. Big sacrifices will also require construction of an altar, if people are coming from some distance, guests are invited, so temporary structures will be built by carpenters, and everyone gets to do something, and it's all offered ultimately to Vishnu. So yajna means Vishnu. It can be understood something in this way: dharma virudho bhuteshu kamosmi bharata arshaba. Krishna says that I am that desire which is not contrary to religious principles. This particularly refers to the sexual act. So the sexual act, if performed according to religious principles, is Krishna. It means that Krishna is fully present or represented by that. So in the same way, yajna, everything, the yajna itself and everything that is involved in preparing for the yajna, which means all the activities, all the economic activities of the society, it's all culminates in yajna. So in this way, the whole society, everything it does, is connected with Vishnu. Swakarmana tamabhyacha sindhim vindati manavaha. Krishna says that by the four orders. He specifically says, Hare Krishna. The four orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, he specifies them, and he says that by doing their particular work, as they're supposed to do it, they worship Vishnu, and in this way they can achieve the highest perfection. So this Varnashram system, it regulates human society in such a way that everyone can achieve the highest benefit by worshipping Vishnu in Yajna. That Varnashram system, it's not possible to organize it fully in the manner that it was previously, but still everyone can come together and chant the names of Krishna, and by doing so they will achieve all the benefits, and actually more that people did previously by performing yajna. So, in Bhagavad Gita there is a section in the fourth chapter in which Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, elaborates on the process of yajna. Of course, yajna is mentioned at various places throughout the Bhagavad Gita. It is described by some commentators that the battlefield of Kurukshetra was just like a yajna in which the arrows of Arjuna, they were like the offerings into the fire, and the people being killed. The whole battlefield was just like a big yajna, and Lord Vishnu, Bhagavan, Krishna was personally present and accepting the efforts of his devotees. So, throughout Bhagavad Gita in various places, the word yajna is used. And specifically, there's a section in the fourth chapter which describes that, describes the process of yajna. Beginning with verse 24, in which Srila Prabhupada, in his translation and purport, doesn't directly link it to yajna, but other commentators do, and clearly from the words it's clear that it's spoken in the context of yajna. That will become more clear from the next verse, verse 25. So verse 24, Brahmarpanam brahmahavya brahmagnao brahmana hutam Brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina. So Brahmarpanam. Arpana means offering. So yajna is all about offering. So the word, you will have heard the word Brahma. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times within this verse. So the point is that everything becomes spiritualized. Actually, I should have started from verse 23. I'm just wondering where to start here. Okay, verse 23. I'll read that first. Gata sangasya muktasya jnana avastita chetasaha yagya charatara karma samagram pravaliyate. So the work of a man, so it is described here, the person who is not attached to, difficult when you read a verse, but it all refers to everything before it. So it describes a self-realized person who is unattached to the results of his work in this world. So, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and to everything else, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature, gata-sangasya muktasya, and who is fully situated, jnana-vastita cetasaha, and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge, merges into yagya-yacharata-karma. That means that all his work is a sacrifice. Or yagya, yagyo vai Vishnu. Srila Prabhupada quoted that previously in his Gita purport. Yagya means Vishnu. So Srila Prabhupada gives that meaning here. Yagya, all his work is for the sake of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada translates the whole Bhagavad Gita as it is by giving the directly Krishna conscious meaning, which Srila Prabhupada said is the meaning, therefore it's Bhagavad Gita as it is. But it could be understood in other ways, or indirectly, to say that all his work is yagya. Just by his very attitude of being detached from this world, offering everything into transcendence, which means Krishna. Yagya charata. All his work merges entirely into trend. It all becomes a yagya. Everything he does becomes a yagya. And then, brahmarpanam, everything he offers is spiritualized. Then, havi means butter, particularly that butter the ghee which is offered into the fire of sacrifice. So it all becomes, although it's material, it's material. It's in modern terms we'd analyze in terms of chemical composition and polyunsaturated fats and all that kind of thing. But it's offered, it becomes spiritual. Brahmagnao, the fire or fires, they become fully spiritual because it's because of the attitude. Actually, everything's spiritual, but the spiritual dimension of everything is closed off to us because we don't have the spirit of sacrifice. We have the spirit of enjoyment, but the spiritual nature opens and reveals itself or himself. And we become admitted into that. Hare Krishna. Could everyone who has not turned off their cell phone please do so? And any other device, children's toys or whatever, that may make some sound. We become qualified to enter into that. We become accepted. Krishna reveals himself. The fire. Hutam again means that which is offered. So I'm going to check that. What is the difference meant here by arpana and huta? Because they have similar meanings, but undoubtedly there will be some important difference also. So brahmaiva tena gantavyam, that such a person goes to the spiritual atmosphere. That is his destination, that's where he goes, that's his destination. Because all his work is completely spiritualized. He has a complete absorption in the spiritual while he's engaged in apparently material activities. So, Srila Prabhupada often explained that a materialist and a devotee may appear to be working in the same way. They may have much the same activities. A spiritualist may be maintaining his family, materialist also. But the spiritualist does it for the sake of Krishna. materialist does it for the sake of his own sense gratification. So they get a different result due to their attitude. Text 25. Daivam eva pare yagyam yoginah paryupasate brahmagna vapare yagyam yagyena evo pajuvati. So in worshipping the demigods, so there are different kinds of worshippers. So some people worship the demigods. Other different kinds of yogis, yogis may worship the demigods, and some of them offer to the Brahma, to the Supreme Brahman. Then different kinds of sacrifice, apart from directly sacrifice with fire, there are different kinds of fire which are described. And in Shastra, there are the different kinds, seven different kinds of fire, but this another idea of sacrifice is given in the next few verses. Shrota din indriyanyanye samyam agne shujuvati shabda din vishayananya indriyagne shujuvati. Different kinds of sacrifice. Some, they offer their hearing, all their senses beginning with hearing, they offer into the fire of mental control, of samyama. So all the unadulterated brahmacharis, they offer all their senses are controlled, beginning with hearing. By hearing, then they're able to control all their senses. They hear, they understand what should. First of all, they hear orders and they follow. And then they hear and understand why they should follow. In this way, they control their mind and all their senses. And this in itself is a yajna. The fire is the fire of mental control. And others, in brackets here, Srila Prabhupada writes, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. So the brahmacharis, they offer all their senses into the fire of self-control, and the householders sacrifice the objects that will come up now, dravya yagya, the objects of the senses, in the fire. So this householders, they engage in brahmacharis are not supposed to engage in sensual activities. Of course, no one can avoid sensual activity at some level, but very restricted for the brahmachari, just only for the sake of maintaining the body. Their main activity is to hear, and whatever activities they do is in the service of their guru. The householder has a license for sense enjoyment, but he doesn't indulge in the spiritually committed householder doesn't engage his senses in sense enjoyment, but rather those sensual activities of which the householder's particular license, which no other members of no other ashram has, is the license for sexual activity. But he sacrificed the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. That is his yajna. That by acting as a householder, that's actually a yajna for him. So in this way, everyone is in performing a yajna. Savani indriya karmani prana karmani chapare atma sangyama yoga agnau juhvati jnana dipite. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and the senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind. So that is, seems to be a, yeah, it's a rehash, or stated in another way, what that which was stated in the previous verse, which I'll make a note of also, because I didn't notice that before, even though I read it maybe hundreds of times. Amazing. It's such an obvious thing, and I didn't even notice it. So, text 28. Dravya-yagya-stapo-yagya-yoga-yagya-stathapare svadhyaya-jnana-yagya-schayataya sorry, yataya-sangshita-vrataha. So, dravya-yagya, sacrificing one's possessions, sacrificing objects, that's offering the... How, apart from big public sacrifices, the householder at home, especially the brahmana, also kshatriyas, also vaishyas at home, they perform sacrifices, yajna every day, in which one has to offer something. It may not, maybe not be huge pots of ghee, but at least some. So one sacrifices one's possessions. And apart from offering into the fire, there's also the idea of all one's possessions are not meant for me, they're meant for the service of others. And particularly in Vedic culture, if a guest comes to a non-scheduled guest, he just turns up, that would generally mean a traveling brahmana or someone, brahmana who's who always just travels here and there from one holy place to another, a sadhu like that. Or it may mean someone who's a brahmana who's on a pilgrimage or for whatever, for some work or other, he's going from one place to another, maybe he's going from one place, going to the king's capital to for whatever reason. They may go there to beg something or to instruct the king or whatever. So he becomes known as atithi, guest, is translated as unscheduled guest. Atithi is deva, he's God, he should be treated just like God, with the idea that whatever is in one possession, one should offer it to such a person. Of course, the guest should not take advantage. A brahmin is supposed to be renounced, and that's why he doesn't just say, okay, well, you offer everything to me, okay, well, I think I'll stay here and you can go and you can leave your wife here. But he doesn't do that. That's why he's, because he does, because just as Narayan himself doesn't have the exploitive spirit, so someone who's fit to be worshipped as Narayan, he's fit to be worshipped as such because, like Narayan, he doesn't have the exploitive spirit. He has the spirit to help others. Whatever he has, he wants to help them with it. So rascals who take the position of brahmanas and gurus now you give to give. I'll exploit. They are simply rascals who have usurped that exalted position of being a brahmana and a guru. So one should offer everything. That spirit of offering everything, we see that in the life of Bilva Mangal Thakur. He wanted the Vaishya in whose house he had come to, you give me your wife. And Vaishya said, okay, that's I have to do. And visiting brahmana he wants. So he was prepared to do that. And of course Bilva Mangal then again came to his mind, and he took the hairpins from the lady's hair and gouged out his eyes with that. So, dravya yagyas, tapo yagya, another kind of yagya, the fire of austerity, tapasya. That's we also have the word related to that, tapa, heat. The idea that the fire of austerity burns, just like fire purifies. If
a precious metal like gold is mixed with impurities and put it in the fire, all the impurities will come out. An expert metallurgist who knows how to do this, how to purify, to extract the pure metal, whether it's iron, copper, silver, gold, whatever, from its ore, so that you only get the pure substance is left by fire. So the idea is that by the fire of austerities, the impurities burn out. And actually, by performing austerity, one can actually produce fire. Sometimes the yogis, they do that. They decide, well, I've done enough austerity. I think I'm ready to go to heaven. So they just sit down and burn their body up. they know how to ignite the fire within their body. Fire is within every living body, and they just ignite it. Or they may, their angry look, fiery look. Sometimes we say if someone looks angrily at another, we'll say he fierily glanced at them. But the yogis, they can actually not just look like fire, but actually produce fire and burn others up. As in the case of Lord Shiva, famously, with Kamadev, the god of love, who thereafter became known as Ananga. He continued to exist, but he didn't have a body because he was burned up by Lord Shiva. And there are many examples, such as Muchukundu burning up this Kala the Yavana, by the fire emanating from his eyes. So that's another kind of yagya, tapo yagya, yoga yagya, and others, they perform the yagya of yoga. We should always remember in Bhagavad Gita, this word yoga comes up repeatedly throughout the Bhagavad Gita, and in fact, Bhagavad Gita is described as yoga shastra. But it doesn't, in Bhagavad Gita, the term yagya doesn't mean this, doesn't primarily mean, and hardly even secondarily, this performing various asanas and exercises. At Rishikesh, I was staying by some arrangement by the two main, on the other side from the main town, there's the, what's it called, Swagashram? No, Shivananda's on the other side, but on the other side there's the Swaga, something like that. There are two main ashrams on that side, and on the main side where the main town is, the Shivananda ashram is there, which actually doesn't look very big, but two main ashrams there are the Paramarth, who organized this International Yoga Week, and the ashram, or what are they, set up, organized by Gita Bhavan, based in Gorakhpur, who have the Gita Press, the very name Gita Press, they produce so many Gita. So the Gita Press, or the Gita Bhavan people, they don't like this Paramarth, this ashram there, because they promote yoga as being all this exercise and so-called meditation. They say, no, you're in Bhagavad Gita, which they promote, the yoga means, it's got a much, much broader meaning. And the central meaning of yoga is not exercises or even meditation, but it is to link with the Supreme. As Krishna tells Arjuna, tasmat yogi bhavarjuna, you should be a yogi, yoga yukto bhavarjuna. You become linked in yoga. So the whole of Bhagavad Gita has been for yoga, and those who specifically practice yoga, that's also considered a yagya. Svadhyaya, that's another. Svadhyaya is a personal study. One hears from the guru, and then the guru may tell him, you study this book and this book. You have to personally study it also. And that's also one kind of yagya, which is particularly undertaken by the brahmacharis, can be undertaken by others also. Svadhyaya, jnana yagya. In this way, they perform jnana yagya, the acquisition of knowledge. We say acquisition, it's In English, it gives the idea of gaining something for one's own gain, but it doesn't really fit the idea of acquiring, maybe acquiring knowledge. No, it's the same. It's the same word. It's just a different form. Receiving knowledge, I guess that would be such a respectfully receiving, becoming enriched by that knowledge. That is one kind of yajna, which the yataya, the yatis, Srila Prabhupada translates this as enlightened persons. Yati is generally a synonym for a sannyasi, a person who has renounced the world for the sake of spiritual uplift. So the yatis, they take to strict vows. So Srila Prabhupada translates this verse, having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism. Srila Prabhupada translates yoga here as the yoga of eightfold mysticism. That means the Ashtanga yoga. Of course, when I say Srila Prabhupada translates, it's not just his imagination, but he'll be following the previous acharyas, particularly Baladev Vidyabhushan, who himself followed previous acharyas, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. Then, apane juhvati pranam, prane pranam tatapare, pranapana gati rudva. Gati rudva. Pranayama parayanaha, aparenyatahara pranan praneshu juvati. Then other kinds of yajnas. Others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance. Practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming and the incoming breath into the outgoing. This is pranayama. The word is given in Sanskrit, pranayama. And thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Pranapana gati rudva means they stop out breathing out and breathing in. Others curtailing the eating process. It means niyata ahara, means controlled eating. Not non-eating, but controlled eating. And they offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. So this is all very technical stuff, and Srila Prabhupada gives a summary of that in his purport. If you want to know more about it, you have to study the whole process of yoga as given in the Yoga Sutras with their commentaries, but you don't need to. Then, sarve pyete yagya vido, yagya kshapita kalmashaha, yagya shishtamrita bhujo, yanti brahma sanatanam. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice, so this is very important, one should know the meaning of sacrifice, become cleansed of sinful reactions. So if you're doing it but you don't really know why you're doing it, you're not so likely to be cleansed of sinful reactions. And having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifices, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere. Yagya shishtamrita bhujaha means literally means they taste the the nectar of yagya shishta, which literally means that which has been offered in the sacrifice. So that for us that means we take prasadam, it's nectar, food offered to Krishna. So I just have a quick look at this. And then, summarizing the whole thing, Krishna says, Nayam lokostya yagyasya kuto nya kurusattama. Addressing Arjuna as Kurusattama, the best among the Kurus, or best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice, a person who doesn't do sacrifice, ayagyasya, a person who doesn't participate, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? It's a rhetorical question. And then Krishna goes on, evam bahuvidha yagya vitata brahmano mukhe karmajan vidhitan sarvan evam gyatva vimokshase. All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas. And actually there are others also, the various different types of fire sacrifice. And Krishna is talking about, he's just spoken about different kinds of sacrifice, not just fire, but all different kinds of Vedic processes. They may all be considered yagyas. Evam bahuvidha yagya vitata brahmano mukhe karmajan vidhitan sarvan evam gyatva vimokshase. All these different kinds of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas. And all of them are born of different kinds of work. So you may wonder, what's this, you know, Arjuna just wants to, do I fight or I don't fight? And Krishna's talking all this stuff about yoga, and Krishna, yoga and yagya, and Krishna brings it back that all of this comes from work or activity. So Arjuna's idea is to give up all kinds of activity, but Krishna says, just understand this properly, that you have to, you're in yagya, you have to perform, all yagya is based on activity. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. You should understand this. It's very important to understand this, otherwise we can go through the ritual, so to speak, of performing the ritual, but you won't get the result, and you won't get the full result of brahmaiva tena gantavyam. You won't go to the spiritual atmosphere if you do it in material consciousness. If you think, okay, I put this much ghee in, and I'll get so much result out, then you don't get the result of becoming spiritualized. One has to understand this. Then, Shreyan dravyamaya dyagyaj jnana yagya parantapa sarvam karma kilam parta jnane parisimapyate. Krishna says there's this sacrifice of dravya, material possessions. Ghee, grains, different things one can put in the fire. Apart from putting in the fire, one may give gold, silk, jewels to the king, may give to brahmanas in the sacrifice, may feed so many people, so it's all part of what he is sacrificing. But better than that is the sacrifice performed in knowledge, or but Krishna says, whether you do it knowingly or not knowingly, all sacrifices, they are all meant to lead to knowing, to knowledge. So that's why this chapter, even though there's so much about yagya, but it all is, all sacrifice of work, Srila Prabhupada's right, culminate in transcendental knowledge. So that's the point that Krishna comes to, and next is the famous verse, Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya Upadikshanti Te Gyanam Gyaninas Tattva Darshanaha. So one has to know why one is doing all these things, therefore one should be approach a guru to understand. So that's that section on yagya, which is Vishnu. One should understand yagya is Vishnu. It's all non-different from him. It's all meant to be offered to him. We're supposed to offer everything we have, ultimately our very self, to Vishnu, and by doing so, automatically we become freed from the bondage of karma. This whole idea of getting free from material pangs, material bondage, is affected if one worships Vishnu in the spirit that Bali Maharaj did. He was tied up by Vishnu, but to be tied up by Vishnu is much better than being tied up by anyway, we're tied up. Either we're tied up by the ropes of material nature, daivihi esha gunamai, or if we can be tied up by Vishnu, then we're liberated from material, or tied up. Actually, Vishnu told Garuda that you tie him up. You tie up Bali Maharaj. So to be tied up, either we're tied up by the ropes of Maya, or by Pranaya Rasanaya, the ropes of love, by which the devotee ties up Krishna. So instead of being tied up by the ropes of Maya, we get free and we tie up Krishna. So yagya is very ritualistic, very formal, solemn, with awe, reverence, veneration. But the Sankirtan yagya can be seemingly wild, beyond mere veneration. It's an outpouring of joy. This is the ultimate yagya. Sarva yagya. What is that? Sarva yagya hoite. Sankirtan yagya. I can't remember exactly. In Chaitanya Charitam. Sarva yagya hoite sankirtan yagya sa. That's not exactly right. I can't remember. Anyway, but it means that from all, in comparison to all the yagyas, sankirtan yagya, it's not only the substitute in Kali Yuga, because we can't perform all the other sacrifices, but it's actually the best of all yagyas in any yoga. And in any yoga, when performing sacrifice, yagyas, one has to chant the names of Vishnu. So that's actually that's the essence, of course, not chanting, but with the spirit, which is reified or made concrete and positive by pouring items into the fire. But that spirit of I'm giving myself to Vishnu, that is the essence of Sankirtan Yagya. Srila Prabhupada told us that the meaning of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, the Maha Mantra means that, O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. And this is applicable from the very beginning stage of devotional service, even up to the highest level. The devotee, he simply prays to be engaged in the service of Krishna. Sarva jagya hoite nama. I can't remember. No, that's a different verse altogether. It's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bengali. Sarva jagya hoite sankirtan jagya sa, something like this. You can type in Sarva yagya hoite, is spelled H-A-A-H-A-I-T-E. Prana. It's Krishna Nama Yagyasa, that's it, yeah. Sarva Jagya Hoite Krishna Nama Jagyasa. Yeah, that's the Bengali explanation in Chaitanya Charitamrita of the Krishna Varnang Tushar Krishnam verse. So yagya by yagya, one becomes happy, materially even. So by Krishna conscious, one becomes happy. Krishna says in the third chapter that by performing sacrifice, the demigods become happy. So Krishna makes the demigods happy by as the actual acceptor of everything in the sacrifice. He also gives, that's the one name that was just given just prior to this, Samihina. It means one who places the demigods in their positions. So Shankara, he links that name with this name Yajna to say that by Yajna, the Supreme Lord establishes the demigods in their positions and allows them to enjoy the sacrifices. And he makes the whole system by which offerings can be made to them, by which they become happy. So the demigods and the humans become happy by the performance of sacrifice. What's that in the third chapter? Ishta Deva. Just at the beginning of the third chapter. By this performance of sacrifice. Devan, Devan bhava yatane nate deva bhava yantuvaha parasparam bhava yantaha shaya paramabhavsita. The demigods being pleased by sacrifices will also please you. So both the humans and the demigods become happy by sacrifices. And thus by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. Ishtan bhogan hivo deva. Yeah. So Hare Krishna. Any questions about this? Please. Oh, just some other dictionary meanings of yajna. Yajna also means an offering, the offering itself, that's already there in the Gita. Brahmarpanam, prayer, praise, devotion, worship, fire. These are all meanings of yajna from the Sanskrit dictionary. Yes, please. In different ages, there are different yoga dharmas. Yeah. But in all of them, they have to chant the holy name. Well, the holy name is not emphasized in other. There is in the Satya Yoga, Kriteya Dhyayato Vishnum, one meditates. So the mental perception of Vishnu is given emphasis there. Then in Tretayam Yajato Makai, in Treta Yoga, by sacrifice, in which they chant the names. In deity worship, Dwapare Paricharyayam, deity worship, their names have to be chanted, mantra, the Namatmaka mantras, mantras which are composed of the holy names. But in Kali Yoga, emphasis is given. Therefore, as you just read out, Kaling Sabhaji Anti Arya, Gunagya Sarabhagina. What is that? Yasmin sankirtane naiva tato swarto palabhyate. So persons who are most intelligent, they worship, they think Kali Yuga is the best. Because simply by sankirtan one can get all benefits, material and spiritual, by the simple process. Sarvasvato palabhyate. That's it. Sarvasvato palabhyate. So, if you have time and inclination, you can study and we'll find layers and layers of depth in all of this, in every word of Shastra. And actually scholars in other traditions too, due to those Quranic scholars, or they'd study the Quran and the Hadith and all this, and biblical scholars, they find so much meaning in all the statements, but they have to study it in the original language to find out all the meanings. There's still, generally there's this idea that it's being promoted that Muslim means someone with a rag on his head who goes around shooting people. and chopping their heads off and blowing them up and all this kind of thing. But there are many schools of Islamic study where of course, I'm not just talking about the madrasas. There are thousands of madrasas in India where the young children go, but people whose whole life is dedicated to deeply studying particularly the Quran, and there's also Islamic jurisprudence, different schools of that, and there's very deep biblical study, both by Jews and Christians. Anyway, going off the point here. Yourself? You're going to ask something? No.
What is the importance of fire sacrifice in ceremonies during Kali Yuga?
What is the importance of fire sacrifice during ceremonies in Kali Yuga? Not essential at all. It's quite possible to install deities without. If we think about what's the most sacred kind of ceremony we could do, we'd probably come up with installing deities, right? There are so many. But even for that, it's not required. You can just do Sankirtan. Srila Prabhupada had sacrifices and rituals performed for installing deities in temples in India and elsewhere. But particularly in Vrindavan, he mentioned in a purport in his sixth canto of Bhagavatam, that the real sacrifice was the Sankirtan going on by his disciples who were considered by the local people to be Mlechas. And they had all these Brahmins doing all the yajnas. But Prabhupada said the real sacrifice for installing the deities was the Sankirtan yajna. So it's not required at all, actually. But may be done also, because there's nothing wrong with it by any means. But at the same time, we should always remember that Sankirtan Yajna is most important. And what we're making brahmanas, but brahmana in the modern, or in the context of this present time, is not one who's just like I heard just recently Prabhupada saying, a brahmana doesn't mean big shika, big earrings, big tilak, big belly, big ego. It means a Vaishnava. So one who's fully brahmarpanam brahmahavya brahmagnao brahmanahutam brahmaivatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina. One whose all activities are fully dedicated in the service of Krishna is a Vaishnava, and he is the best brahmana. So, and what does he do? Satatam kirtayanto mam. He is always engaged in sankirtan. So, Hare Krishna. Oh, where's my pen? Okay, running out of space here. Ah, you had a question, was it? Someone else? Oh, you had, yeah. We give importance to hearing. Well, Krishna does specifically say, what is that? Shreyan dravya maya yagyas jnana yagyas tata pare. He specifically said that one who performs sacrifice in knowledge is better than one who simply performs it without knowledge. So there is a gradation. We give importance to hearing and chanting. Well, we means we follow Shastra, in which Shravanam and Kirtanam are always emphasized, in bhakti. Whereas in karma kanda, the work and sacrifice is emphasized. But in bhakti, shravana and kirtan is emphasized. So why do we emphasize that? Well, we emphasize it because we follow the acharyas who teach us from shastra that bhakti is ultimate. So what Krishna states here, as Srila Prabhupada presents Bhagavad Gita as it is, the only meaning of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti, to surrender to Krishna. But Krishna is also speaking for the benefit of people who are not convinced of that. So he's giving... Actually, Krishna could just have said at the beginning, Sarvadhaman parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja, bas, finished. But he's explaining all these things for the benefit of people who are not convinced about that. So therefore he gives an overview of all these things, explaining their different perspectives on it and the ultimate perspective on it all. Hare Krishna! All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna! That was actually more of a Bhagavad Gita class, but anyway, Sri Vishnu Sahasranama Ki Jai. It's all interlinked. It's all interlinked. Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu Sahasranama, and both in Mahabharata. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that these are the two jewels of the Mahabharata. This Bhagavad Gita and Vishnu Sahasranama. Okay, Hare Krishna. It's over for now.